Here are some interesting alternatives for Dafyomi. The first recording is of today's Daf from the 13th cycle, which was done within about a half an hour. And that's followed by a very fast review, about 5 minutes, allowing you to review the entire Daf quickly. Followed by the same Daf from either the previous cycle's Dafyomi, or perhaps even from 2 cycles ago, Dafyomi. Different ambiance, usually done in greater detail. You can choose one or the other as your first Daf, the other one as a review Daf. But whatever you do, enjoy. Today's Daf in Masechet Shabbat brought to you by Ben Chomot Yerushalayim, white as snow today, is Daf Tzadik Tet. Perfect day for sitting in front of a fire and chatting. Tzadik Tet. And so we're up to the end of the first line, Tanarabba. Tanarabba and Yiriot HaTachtonot, continuing on with our description of the Mishkan, because after all, we started with the Krashim in order to be able to get to an understanding of our Mishnah of Hazorek, which was Hamoshit, from one Agalah to the other. And then we moved on, utilizing the Agalot as the Makor of the Din of Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid. And we discussed the Halok, the Rishut HaRabim, that which is Mikorah, and how exactly there would be an involvement in Rishut HaRabim if the entire thing was covered, and so on and so forth. Today, we want to continue our discussion, where yesterday we even spoke about how exactly the various layers of the covers of the Mishkan would cover the Krashim and the Adanim, or not the Adanim, the Machlokas of the shape of the Krashim. Today we want to just continue and close the sugya by discussing the mode of manufacture of those Yiriot that we discussed yesterday. So Tanarabban, Yiriot HaTachtonot, the lower Yiriot, which were made out of wool, was wool that was, and weren't entirely of wool, remember, but what you had was various threads that were twisted together. You had tchelet, that's wool dyed with the color of tchelet, argaman, tolat, shani, but there was also sheish, there was also a thread of linen that was twisted together. The elyonot, those above that were the ma'ase izim. Now you would think that normally when we speak about ma'ase izim, it's a very low class material, the hair of an ace, and therefore should be something that requires a lot less of involvement in those that bring it. And yet, remarkably, gedolah chokhmah shenemra be'elyonot yoter mima shenemra betachtonot. We find that the level of chokhmah that is required in the Torah in dealing with those upper izim layer was greater than the level of chokhmah mentioned in the weaving of the, and not only weaving, of course, but the spinning of everything that went into it, the lower yiriyot. Why was that? Because b'tachtonot, we see that it says, v'chol isha chokhmat lev b'yadea tavu. All of the women who had this insight in their hearts, they used their hands to be toveh wool. But when it comes to the izim, it says, remarkably, v'chol anashim asher nasaliban. Only those women whose heart lifted them up with insight knew how to be able to be tove et ha'izim. Remarkably, the Rambam's lashon for someone who wants to be zeicher to keter Torah is mi shenasali bo oto. So it's nesiat alev. That itself is a measurement of chokhmah. In other words, the level of commitment, of the insight and the need to commit is considered to be a nesiat alev, and that is gedolah chokhmah. Which explains why the Rambam says that choice, the question of chokhmah or sachal, is a function of choice, not a function of intelligence, because it has to do with a veltishon, in which you choose a life of chokhmah. And that's nisiyat alev. Tavu et ha'izim. Now note that it says they spun the izim. How do you spin the izim? That's a hilarious kind of picture. V'tana. We learn in a brayta, Mishum Rabbi Nechemia, that indeed the lashon in the Torah is that you have to spin these hairs, twisting them into threads while they were on the izim, which means that the entire preparation, washing off, all the things that you normally do very easily, you put it into the wool, you just put it into a wash, and everything becomes clean and bleached and so on, and then you do the tfiyah. But over here, the nature of the aiz, as anyone who enjoys goat yogurt or goat milk knows, is its earthiness. It's much more earthy than the wool, which is very much separated from the sheep. The hairiness of an aiz, and the special quality of the aiz, is its connection to the way it is. And therefore, the Torah was marketed on the izim, that you're really in touch with the hair while it's on the aiz. That's a very difficult thing to do. Shteg is Yisrael, now getting back to our mission. So, what was our vision of the Zorek versus the Moshit in the Mishnah, you will recall that we separated two situations out for the Machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and Chachamim. We had two porches that were facing each other across a busy street, and you throw from one porch to the other, or pass from one porch to the other. So over there you would be potter. But if you have two porches along a busy street on the same row, and you pass from one to the other, then passing Moshit, you're chayev, Zorek, you're potter, and according to Rabbi Akiva, he learns out Zorek from Moshit. So the reason for this, we said, was because the way in which they would carry the krashim in the Midbar is that first when they took down the krashim and passed them over to those Levim that were standing on the Rishut HaYachid, which was the wagon. So they would pass, they would park the trucks one behind the other, and take apart the Mishkan, hand the Krashim up, and then the person, obviously people, these were extremely heavy things, that certainly could not be thrown in anyway, would pass them back to the truck behind them, which were all in one lane, parked in one lane, one behind the other, fill up the back truck first, then fill up the front truck. In order to get to the back truck, they had to pass from one Rishut HaYachid, which was the back of the truck itself, across the Rishut HaRabim, which was the road along which it was parked, to the truck in the back. And that was the primary mode of taking that Mishkan apart, which means that that is a Moshit from one porch, so to speak, to another porch, along a single lengthwise lane in the Rishut HaYachid.
Oh,
that's a very... You mean, why not pull up one truck after the other? Because then it would be lying there to taken apart. We wouldn't be able to do it all in one. This is just more mechubad. And we often do things, I mean, certainly when you have trains and things like that, this used to happen. Now they use these containers, because then you can move the train. Talking about those agalot, and we already dealt with this before, we're going to look at it a little bit more in terms of how the size of the agalah relates to the krashim that it was carrying. So we said before that beneath the agalot, we said that that was the part that wasn't mikorah, beneath them, because otherwise it wouldn't have a din of Rishut HaRabim. Uveinehem, and between the agalot, vitzidehem, and the sides of the agalot. Now the sides of the agalot, we said before, was the space between the wheels and between the wheel along the axle and the side of the agalah, all of that area is considered to be Rishut HaRabim. Om Rabbi, let's take a look at the measurements over here. Between one agalah and the next was exactly the same as the actual length of the agalah itself. So, ben agalah la agalah was an additional kimlo orech agalah. Now, what was the orech of the agalah? Chamesh amot. What we had over here was five amot. Five amot? Why exactly did we need five amot? Of course, we spoke about all of this before. It was five amot. Why did it need to be five amot? Would it not be sufficient to have just four and a half? And of course, the reason why it would be sufficient to be just four and a half is, as we saw earlier, sufficient to have four and a half because when you're taking these krashim and you're putting them lengthwise on the agalah, so then what you have is two possibilities. Either you could take the width of the keresh, which is one and a half amot, to make two piles of that width of the keresh, or you could take the thin edge of the keresh, which is the one amah. So fine, if you take the case in which you make three piles, the one and a half amot, so then you would have four and a half amot would be fine. Why would you need five? And if you're taking the thin edge, then you would make four piles. Now you can't put them right next to each other. The reason you can't put them right next to each other is because they had rings that were sticking out, which were required for the brichim. Only the briach that was tichona went through the wood itself. All of the other brichim were placed into those rings on the outside. So therefore, even if you stack them with the rings facing each other, you'd need, as anybody tries to put his sukkah into closed storage knows, you've got to allow that little additional space, even if you stagger them. So there's no way that we could fit it in literally four into four. But certainly allowing that extra space for the rings, we could easily fit four rows of one amma thick. We could fit into four and a half, but we certainly don't need five. No matter how you work it out, how would you come up with five? So, lomali, the arba, the palga, sagi would be sufficient to have four and a half, wouldn't it? Yes, it would. Of course, it would. But we want to make sure. We do not want the crushim in either direction. We do not want them bouncing around, banging and hitting each other, in which they're all going to get scratched constantly. Because of that, we want to make sure that they do not end up hitting each other and ruining each other.
No packing material?
Bubble paper?
Even if we would. Excelsior. We would have extended the size.
Excelsior.
Maybe with you. Oh, my brother. I mean, maybe that includes the idea of putting something in to prevent any damage. Oh, my brother, you should know that the sides of the agala, tzidei agala, are as wide as the agala itself, which means that if you include the entire side area, which is also the tires and the axles and the edge of the agala, so then you have the same size as the bed of the agala itself. And how much is that? Kama rochav agala? Shtei amot v'mechza. What you have is 2.5 amot in the width of the agala. And why would I need that amount? Lamali, what do I need shtei amot v'mechza? Could I not have amta upalga? So would it not be possible for me to have, let's say that I need, you're saying 2.5, because maybe I would need to actually put the krashim inside, okay? But even if I do, if I put two rows of krashim, then and I put them down on their edge, so I put one carriage on top of the other, I still only need, if I'm carrying for a repair, whatever it is, I'm carrying a single carriage. But what do I need? I need basically 1.5 amot, and that way I'll have it on its edge, and there'll be plenty of room. Oh, yeah, there'll be plenty of room, all right. The only problem is that then they'll start tipping in one direction or another. These krashim, remember, they were 10 amot long. So if you've got a thin bed for these krashim, you're going to have a problem of them sticking out a lot on either side. And then they're going to bounce and fall. And therefore, we need at least a bed of 2.5 that is going to hold them up. Well, wait a minute. But then we've got a problem. Because then what is the total distance between the edge of one truck and the edge of the outside truck? Let's say that you've got these agalot, they're driving down the street, so to speak, which is the Rishut Rabim in the Midbar, side by side. So you've got the actual two trucks, and then you've got the distance of the edges of the two trucks between each one. You've got an additional 2.5 on each side, right? So then that equals 15. Don't we have a rule that a Rishut Rabim is 16 amot? Remember, we're talking about 2.5 wheel axle inside, 2.5 agala, 2.5 wheel axle inside, 2.5 wheel axle inside for the next agala, 2.5 bed agala, and then 2.5 sticking out on the end. So that means that you have a total of 15. So the other kaimlan, don't we have a rule that derech Rishut Rabim has to be sheshes reyama, which is taken from the midbar? So ananda gamrila mi mishkan. I mean, the whole idea here is taken from the mishkan. But you've just said that the mishkan is only 15. Chamesre avya. Now Rashi asks the obvious question. How in the world can we measure from the wagons when the wagons were carrying lengthwise krashim that were 10 amot, which gives us a minimum of 20 amot? 10 amot each carriage. I don't care how you fit them in. I don't care if you want to make them very long on one side and short on the other side, such that you only have 5 amot in the middle covered with carriage, but you've got the krashim sticking out on the other side too, don't you? So then the road had to be wide enough to accommodate a wide load. So why doesn't that mean that you have a minimum of 20 amot for the Rishut Rabim? How can we ignore that?
They're always traveling parallel.
Yeah. Says Rashi, because remember, the krashim were more than atzarat tefachim above the ground. We already had shown that when we analyzed how high the wheels of the agalot were. If that's the case, I don't care if they stuck out over people's heads or whatever it is. That is not part of Rishut Rabim. We don't include that in Rishut Rabim. Only things that are within 10 tefachim. So those things that are within 10 tefachim were indeed the actual wagon and the side of the wagon itself. Answers the Gemara, because they did not drive side by side, literally. We had to leave a little bit of space between the lanes. And why was that? Because we needed a Ben Levi that would walk between these wagons. If there was any movement of the krashim, so that they tended to fall or move away, or move too close, he would keep a hand on matters, make sure that everything was perfectly balanced.
This is the core for people in this country walking in the middle of the street.
Well, it doesn't say that the Amma Yitera was in order to crush the Ben Levi.
Oh.
I mean, they used to drive properly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now he's
and now Sir Richard will give us his famous rendition in Russian. Now let's imagine a situation where you have a well, and around this well is a chulia. So when you dug it, you piled up all of the insides around it, and from inside of that well, you may be able to measure 10 tefachim. From outside of that well, you're only measuring 5 tefachim, let's say, in height, because the well is deeper. Or you just have a cella. Let's keep it partial. You have a cella standing in the middle of Rishut Rabim, but they're 10 tefachim high, the cella, and 4x4. Aha. Now that gives us the full shear of minimum of Rishut HaYachid. If you take from you take something from the street, put it on them, or you take from them and put it down in the street, you would be chayiv because you're taking from a Rishut HaYachid to Rishut Rabim or vice versa. But if it's less than Asarat Tefachim or less than 4x4, then you would be potter. Well, why are we talking about the chulia of the bor? I mean, wouldn't the correct case be convex or concave? Isn't that what we want to talk about? You take out of a bor that is 10 Tefachim, or you take off of a sela that's 10 Tefachim. I mean, like, that's what I'm expecting to hear. Instead, I hear chuliyat habor. Why are we talking about the chuliyat habor? If the bor is the important part. Ah, I'll tell you why. Brilliant. This is here to tell us this amazing halacha, Rabbi Yochanan. The Yomar Rabbi Yochanan, bor v'chuliyata mitztarfim la'asara. That if this bor itself is only 5 tefachim deep, and therefore if you take water out of it, it should not be out of Rishut HaYachid. But since it also has an additional 5 tefachim, which is provided by the little rim around the bor, so that in total, when you're standing in that bor, you've got 10 tefachim from the water level to the top, then it's Rishut HaYachid. And if you take water out of it, put it outside, then you would be removing from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim. And indeed, Tanya Nami Archi, we learn Beferush this halacha in a Baraita, which Rabbi Yochanan was Medayik, from the unnecessary case of the Mishnah. And what is that? Bor Bereshut HaRabim Amuka Asara Urechava Arba'a. Ein B'malini Mena Mishabat. You're not allowed to take water out of that bor on Shabbos unless you make a full-scale mechitza surrounding the entire area by a mechitza gevoa Asara Tefachim. And that way, when you remove the water, you're removing it into a Rishut HaYachid. That's okay. From Rishut HaYachid into the Rishut HaYachid around it. But now, of course, the problem is, why is that? Didn't we say that there's a special halakha that we spoke about earlier called Pasei Beiraot? We're going to get in great detail into Pasei Beiraot in Eruvin. But why are not Pasei Beiraot, which is a representation of a wall, which consists of only the edges, 4 edges, which creates the image of a wall, and that you don't need the entire full wall, and the Chachomim were makel in that case to carry even from a bor in Rishut HaRabim. So Tosfos explains that is only a bor of a Rabim. Not that was a special kula that the Chachomim allowed you to be semich on a minimal mechitza of Pasei Beiraot in order that people that are coming up to Yerushalayim and they need to be able to encamp on Shabbos and take things out, we were makel that. Mashenken and Bor HaYachid, we do not allow you to do that unless we're talking about something that's less than Asarat Tefachim. In other words, if it's a Carmelite, then we're makel even for Yochid to use Pasei Beiraot. But here we're talking about a full-scale bor. You can't do that. So you've got to make a full mechitza, or if you want to drink directly from that bor, and you're going to be drinking by filling up a cup of water, we've got a problem because we have a gezeira that you may accidentally take the cup of water out and move your head back, and then you'd be carrying. The only thing you could do is you could move rove of your body together with your head onto the other side, lean over. Then we're not afraid. So in that case, you could be yichlis al rosho v'rubo. And here's the crucial part, bor v'chuyata mitztarfim la'asara, which is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. To define what we mean by a bor that's Rishut HaYachid, we need to take the total height meaning all the way to the top of the chulia that's around it, so that the rim around the bor is part of the depth of the bor. Boy, the neighbor of Mordechai Mirava. Richie! Amud b'Rishut HaRabim. You have here a rock standing in the middle of Rishut HaRabim, like we have here very often in the Rova. You've got these fancy, these archaeological large pillars and things. And it's 10 tefachim high, and it's 4 tefachim wide. If you take something and you throw it to the top of that pillar from the Rishut HaRabim, what's the din? Zorak v'nachak abav mahu. Do we say, well, look, you were oker from Rishut HaRabim, you were meiniach in a Rishut HaYachid. So the akira is be'isra. The anacha is be'isra. Well, it's true that the only way you would be able to get to the top of this pillar, Sir Richard, is by having the item that you're throwing go over it and land. But the moment that it goes over it, it's outside of Atzarat Vachim, which means it went into a Malkum Ptur. So in order for it to land and to clear the edge of the pillar, it had to be above the Rishut HaRabim. In which case, you didn't really transfer from Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid. You only did an Akira and a Hanacha. But what about the actual moment of the transference? It was in a Malkum Ptur. Then perhaps we should say, Oh, the Makiva de Makom Ptur Ka'atya, since it's got to go through a Makom Ptur, then you'd be Potter. Omar Lay, what a dumb question. That's our Mishnah. Of course, it's our Mishnah because it says that if you have a stone in the middle of Rishut HaRabim and you put something over the stone, obviously the only way you can put something over the stone is by clearing the stone. But then that means you went above Atzarat Tvachim. So that's who you're asking, the Mishnah? You only know how to read the Mishnah? Reb Mordechai turns away in disgust and goes and asks the same question to Reb Yosef. Sa'at HaShailei L'Reb Yosef. Says Reb Yosef to him incredulously, that's the Mishnah. Turns around, finds somebody else to ask the question. Atta Shaila Abaye. Normalai says Abaye. Huh? That's the Mishnah. Amar Lahu. So Mordechai says to my God, you've all got the same spit. You know, you all spit out the same answer without thinking about what you're saying. It has nothing to do with the Mishnah. Kucha Baroka Dadari Tvita. You're all mixing your saliva together here. Omar Lay. He just said, they don't understand. They all say to him, what? What? I mean, what alternative is there? Ve'atlo Tizbra? I don't get it. How do you read the Mishnah? That's not. Hanotel me'em v'anotein agabam chayav. Huh? Doesn't that mean, I mean, how did you get there if you didn't clear the edge? Omar Lay. I'll tell you how. You have a needle. A needle? You mean you have a two-dimensional needle. Is that it? An invisible two-dimensional needle that has no third-dimensional extension whatsoever and does not exist in our space, and that's your chayav on? I mean, come off it, man. Even Machat Nami, Evshut Lomadal, your port has got to have a little bit of a third dimension. If it's got a third dimension, then it had to clear the edge. No, says Reb Mordechai, I knew you would say that. But what you didn't take into consideration is the fact that when you have a Rishut HaYachid, same thing is true, of course, in Rishut HaRabim, as we've had before. When you have a Rishut HaYachid that has an edge to it, the edge that is used by the Rishut HaYachid, Sir Richard, is excellent for falling off of when you fall asleep in Tafyomi. Then you just roll right off the edge. But because of that, it serves as an extension of, it's called Chorei Rishut HaYachid. Chorei Rishut HaYachid, you have a little shelf, a little window, whatever it is part of the Rishut HaYachid, even though it itself is not have the full 4x4 10 tefachim high. And therefore, in this case, suppose the edge of the stone comes down a little bit. That is Rishut HaYachid. You put your needle on the edge. Now you got it into Rishut HaYachid without ever clearing the Rishut HaYachid. Because it went into the Chorei Rishut HaYachid. How do you know that's not the case in the Mishnah? Huh? So it's talking about Itlei Mursha. Or you know what? It may have a little crack in the stone. You put it into the crack. Now, all of that is considered to be part of the Rishut HaYachid. And, nonetheless, you're chayev not because it went over, but because you never went over. Amar of Naisha went over. Yeah, never went over the edge. Never went over the top. Never went beyond the Asarat Vachim. I'm asking you in a case where it did go over. And you're all sitting here telling me, oh yeah, just spit out an answer. Amar of Naisha. Boy, Reb Yochanan. I have another question, says Reb Yochanan. How about if you've got a kotel in Rishut HaRabim, okay? Richie, you're playing with very dangerous firepower here. You've got this wall in Rishut Rabim, and it is 10 tefachim high. Now, it's not 4 tefachim wide. It surrounds a yard, which would have been a Carmelite if it wouldn't have been for the fact that it was surrounded by this kotel. The very fact that it's surrounded by a kotel means that it turns into Rishut HaYachid, correct? Now, we have an interesting situation over here. The area behind the wall becomes Rishut HaYachid. Does that mean that the edge of the wall of the outside is part of that Rishut HaYachid? And the entire thing now is Rishut HaYachid from its outer edge in? Or is it only the inside that is Rishut HaYachid, but the wall is viewed as something else, and it itself is not a Rishut HaYachid? So I want to know, if you were Zarek the Nachal Gabav, you throw something and it lands on top of that wall, what's the difference? Do we say that since it itself is not a Mokum that is Rochav Arba, so then it's just a Mokum Ptur? Anything which isn't Arba al Arba, it would have a din of a Mokum Ptur. O Dilma, given Da'asa O Rishut HaYachid, do we say that since the area inside is considered to be a Rishut HaYachid, so it's Kemandemalya Damya, it's as if the entire thing was filled up with Rishut HaYachid, including the wall itself, all the way to the outside of the wall? Omar Ula, well, I mean, it seems to be a Kal V'chomer. I mean, if this wall is good enough to make the area behind it a mechitza of Asara to be a Rishut HaYachid, so la'achirim osa mechitza, shall it not serve the purposes of being a mechitza for itself? Which is mukaf Carmelite, it itself was makif a Carmelite, turning that Carmelite into Rishut HaYachid, then the din of Azorek v'nachal gabav is chayav, for the same reason that we just stated. If it makes itself a bechitza for another area behind it, la'atzmo lo kol sheken. Boy, Rabbi Yochanan. Now, Rabbi Yochanan has a brilliant question. You have a bor, which is b'sach hakol 9 tefachim deep. You go into that bor, and you lift up the lower level of bricks, let's say, that are lined on the bottom of that bor. You pick those bricks up out of the bor. But in doing so, you added another tefach of depth. Now, did you remove those bricks from Rishut HaYachid by lifting them up and thereby turning the bor into 10 tefachim deep? Or do we say, but it wasn't 10 tefachim deep when you lifted it out of the bor? It only became 10 tefachim deep when you lifted it out of the bor. So how does that work? It's the same as everyone in this country who cuts off the branch that they're leaning on it. Obviously, you don't have to be standing on it. You could have bent down and picked it up. So what would be the din? Ma, akirat chefetz ve'asiyata mechitza is one act. And it's Ba'adi Adadi Ka'atu, and you're Chayef. Or do we say, no, you've got to first have a bor, and then you could be Oker from the bor, but in this case, you don't have a bor that's Rishayachit to be Oker from. Now, in this case, I could say that perhaps the response would be, Imtim Tzoloma, that since you don't start off with a Bechitza Asara in the first place, you cannot call this Rishut HaYachid. How about in the reverse? You start off with Rishut HaYachid, okay? So the bor is Asara. Now, you carry out of Rishut HaRabim a chulia to this bor and put it down in this bor permanently.
What?
A chulia, a lower level, okay? By doing so, you've made it less than Rishut HaYachid, because now it's only 9 tefachim. So natan metocha chulia, and now you were mamayed. Now, in this case, you can't give me a glib answer. Well, it first needed to be a bor. It was a bor. Okay, so there it is. Chulia is coming down into the airspace of this bor, gets closer and closer, and presto, as it lands, no more bor. What's the din there? So do we say that in this case, ma anachat hachefetz v'siluka mechitza kahari adade ka'atu? Do we say that in this case it all comes together, and therefore it landed as a chefetz in a bor, and therefore you're mipchayev? Olo. So mechayev or lo? Okay, so now the question is, do we say umechayev or do we say michayev or lo? It's a separate statement. Because the way Rashi is learning over here, that if we consider the siluk machitza, the previous case, that is coming together, you would be putter. So then in this case, we should say that if it comes together, then it lost the bar, you would be putter, and therefore we have a separate question, mechayev or lo, not u'mechayev. Okay, so the question is more of how do we use the terminology of its coming together. So mechayev or lo mechayev. I don't understand. Rabbi Yochanan is asking a question where he himself is the author of the answer. The case that we have in the Mishnah, somebody throws arbamot and the thing lands on a wall over 10 tvachim high. And we're going to ask, how did it land on the wall? Why didn't it bounce off of the wall? We'll talk about it in a moment. And it says over there, it's as if you threw it into the air. And therefore, it's l'mala mi'asara tvachim. But if it lands l'mata mi'asara tvachim, then it's the equivalent of landing on the ground. And the din is that if you throw along the ground for arba amot, you're chayev. Now, we asked in that case, if something is in the air, then it was never not. So how could you become chayev without a hanacha if it never touched the ground? And Rabbi Yochanan said, it's talking about a case where the landing is not defined by gravity, but is defined by molecular attraction. Namely, you've got a sticky date. So, if you have that, then dvelash mein hashaninu, and it sticks there. And therefore, what's the difference if you land on your side against 4x4, if that's where you're landed, or gravity's pulling you down on 4x4, it's the same thing. Aha! There's only one problem in Rabbi Yochanan's statement. The case as given was you threw it arba amot. Arba amot means exactly arba amot. But the moment that the sticky, nice figgy lands, you no longer have four amot. It's exactly the same as the case of the poor v'chuyato v'kamemayit me'arba amot. Now you weren't thinking, were you? Of course I was thinking. You don't leave a sticky fruit on the side of the kotel permanently. You do leave a lower piece of a bor permanently. So hatam lo mevatalei, ocho mevatalei. We don't have any question about if it lands. What, just because it fills up the whole space, therefore it's not considered to have landed? It landed on the ground. But in a case where now the ground is redefined by the landing, that was the question. Nothing to do with this case. Boy, Rob, how about this? You have a landing pod for your spaceship. Now, this pod does not have an area on top. It is made to hold up your saucer as it lands. So it's just a couple of poles. Okay? So you've got yitzidot that are sticking up out of the ground. Now, you actually are zorak a daf. You throw a saucer onto the poles. Now it lands. The moment that it lands, it suddenly becomes a nice Rishut HaYachid. But it wasn't a Rishut HaYachid when you threw it. Well, wait a minute. So what are you asking? You're asking the same question we had before, basically. Whether the moment of landing that creates a Rishut is looked at as coming all together with the act, or whether we first look at what was, right? So isn't that what we asked before? You're asking whether hanachat chefetz v'asiyat ha-mechitza b'har yadadi ka'atya. So now, your daf, you're saying, has landed in the Rishut HaYachid, defined by your daf. Aha, that is a very interesting, self-referential, Gödelian kind of problem, and Russell kind of problem. And therefore, you're asking the same thing that Rabbi Yochanan asked. Time to Rabbi Yochanan. No. There's an additional little piece that you're missing. The additional little piece is that Rava was asking about a case where you not only throw the daf, but you've got a cup of wine on the daf. Now, you've been practicing this a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You throw the daf. Daf lands. But when daf lands, there is an inevitable bounce to the cup of wine. Cup of wine goes up and then lands. That's his question. Zorak daf chefetz agabav mai. Do we say, well, look, the bottom line is it's landed together, hasn't it? Which means we've boiled that down to the same question we had earlier. Since bari adare ka'ato kitzkanachat chefetz vasiat mechitzat dami, it would be the same question. Or do we say, kima delo efshadol midla porta, look, the reality, the physics is, the cup of wine's got to bounce. And since it's got to bounce, we cannot consider it to have landed simultaneously with the daf. And therefore, in this case, perhaps, we should say, the daf first lands, creates Rishut HaYachid, boom! An instant later, the cup of wine lands on Reshut HaYachid, and you're dead. So came in the Lev Shalom Mid Laport about Anacha, it's in this case Gasiat Mechitza first and then Anachat HaKhefetz Dami. What's the deal? Take it. That's a good one. It is. A letdown. Slow letdown.
For a question.
When it says Be'izim, it means literally Shatuv Bizim and Tavui Mina Izim itself. Chuyat abor v'asela, shen gvoina asara v'rachvan arba, hanotel mihem v'notin agabam chayav, pachot miken patur, loma li limitnei chuyat abor v'asela, litnei abor v'asela, b'sayel Rav Yochanan, nomer Rav Yochanan, bor v'chuyata, mitztarfim la'asar, tanya namiachi, bor v'rshut arabim, amuka asara v'rachva arba, en b'malim imena b'shamat, elim kenasuvla, mechitza gvoa asara t'vachim. Vein shotim emena b'shabat, elim ki nichnis la rosho v'rubo. Ubor v'chuyata, mitztarfim la'asara. Boi minei Rav Mordechai mirova. Amud v'rshut arabim gvoa asara v'rachva arba. V'zarak v'nachal gabav mal. Mi amrina, hare akira b'isur, hare anacha b'isur. Odil makimen de bimakom ptur ka'at yalo. Omale, what do you mean? Matnitini. Oh, boy. Oh, ta shayle la revia tzorani. But, matnitini. I can't believe this. Oh, ta shayle la baye. Omale, matnitini. Omale, kucha baruka da'atari, tafito. Omrule, what's, va'at lo tizbra? But, nana, no, tell me, I'm vanotena gaban chayav. Omale, dima matnitini macha. Machadami, yevshad lo medalia purta. Ha, ha, ha. Mursha. Inami de ramia bacharitza. Omra Maisha boy Rabbi Yochanan kot of Rishut Rabbim gavoa asra v'norachav arba'a. Umukaf lekarmelit v'asa'o Rishut Hayachid v'zorak v'nachal gabav ma'o. Mi amrina kibin eno rachav arba'a. Mokom p'turhu. Odim kibin da asa'o Rishut Hayachid keman d'mal yadamya. Omra lekal v'chomer. If la'achirim ose mechitza la'atzmo lo koshake. Itmanami Omra Pia Barashi, Omarab, and Omra Yitzchak, Omarab Yochanan, Koto, Brishut Rabim Gavas, Ravinor Havarba, Umukaf la Carmelit, Vasa Orishal Yachid, Azorek Venaka Gabav Chayav, La Herima Sebechitzelat, Bolo Korshike, Boy Rabbi Yochanan, Bortisha, the Akami Menahu Yavishlima Las Ramau, Akirat Hefet, Vasiat Mechitza, Bari Adadi Kaatu Mechaye, Olo Mechayev, Vimtim Saloma, Kim the Law of Mechitza, Srami. And at that point, miatamal hanachat chayfetz v'siluk mechitza bari adari kaatu. Question: mechayev or lo mechayev? Tiv shatlay mididei. It's not. Hazorek arba amot pekota lemalam yasrat vachim kezorek ba'avir dam. Lemat ami yasrat kezorek ba'aretz. Hazorek ba'aretz arba amot would be chayev. Now, at that point, we ask: what about hanach? Aval hanach? Amar Rabbi Yochanan there bidvela shemeno shanino shemena shanino v'amai hakebemayit me'arba'amot. Ach, come on, hatam lo mevatale. So you still have a full arba'amot till the kotel. Ach, mevatale. My Rava Zarek daf v'nach agabi yitidot ma. What do you mean? My kami boyle anachat kefetz vasiat bechitz v'ari adarik hatu. Isn't that what Rabbi Yochanan just discussed? No.
Okay, yes, let's review what we did so far yesterday. We stopped in the middle of the sugya on Tzadik Ches Amud Beis. Today's daf is Tzadik Ches, sorry. We wouldn't want to discuss chat rooms on it.
Discuss what?
Tzadik Ches, chat. That's how you spell chat rooms. In Hebrew, Tzadik Ches, remember. At least you'll always remember Boker Or.
Boker Or.
So you're back about Tzadik Ches. We're on Tzadik Ches Amud Beis. And because we went into the sugya of the construction of the crushing, the shape of the crushing, and we easily went into that because we wanted to talk about the way in which they were positioned on the argamot, the reason we went into that was because we wanted to talk about whether Rishut HaRabim Mikora is Rishut HaRabim, and that would depend on whether the crushing jutted out, or whether there was an area between them in which you could walk without having a roof over your head. We ended up also discussing the differences when you put the Mishkan together between the approaches of Rabbi Yehuda and Nechemi. We found yesterday we're calling as to whether on edge the Kreshim looked like right triangles or something like it, anyway, maybe straight on the bottom, then they formed a triangle, or whether they were actually rectangular and all the way up to the top. The difference was that if you held, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that they were triangular shape, approximately like this, one approach, Tosfos says it's not exactly like that probably, but in any event, if it's like this, then you use up less material of the yiriyot on top because you have a diagonal instead of going across an extra tefach on the roof and then having to come down. The result was that the first layer of the Mishkan, which was made, this was the yiriyot that were woven out of the Chelet, Argaman, and Sheshem, and so forth, these things came down, according to Rabbi Yehuda, all the way up to one amma from the ground. Right, so you had the one tefach from the one amma from the ground, and then an amma above instead of an etzah. So you gain an extra amma on the diagonal, almost. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it came down all the way up to the brichin, which is the bottom amma on either side. Very simply, because the floor space of the Mishkan was 10 ammas in width, you didn't have to worry about an extra amma to cover the edge, which left you 18 ammas left. Subtracted 10 from the 28 in the length of the yiriyot. 18 divided by 2 gives you 9 on each side. The height of the kreshim was 10, which means that the bottom amma, plus a little bit more, was uncovered. But that was covered anyway by the silver of the adonim, which covered the bottom, where there were the little pegs where it cut away. Plugged it into the aden, 2 adonim per teresh. And so what you had was basically a construction of silver on the bottom, and the rest was covered with the yiriyot. Whereas according to Reb Nachman, who held it, no, you're going to need to take off an amma on one side, and an amma on the other side for the thickness of the roof. Forget about the 10 ammas, but overall the top of the Mishkan was 12 ammas, because after all it was a rectangle, the prekeresh. So then you end up not only with the silver exposed, but with the legs exposed, so to speak, the bottom of the leg, one amma up above the adin. So this is where we got up to, and this of course was only the first layer of covering of the Mishkan, and we got up to the second layer yesterday, and so we're up to the Asita Yiriyot Izim. The Asita Yiriyot Izim is 5 lines down from the beginning of those big lines on Amud Beis. So, there the Torah continues on to say, the Asita Yiriyot Izim Ba'ohel Al HaMishkan. In this case, there were not Eser Yiriyot, they were Ashte Esrei Yiriyot. Ashte Esrei Yiriyot is 11. That ayin takes the Shte Esrei, and is called in the Zohar an ayin ra, because it detracts from the Shte Esrei and makes it 11. Curiously enough. So Ashte Esrei Yiriyot, the 11 Yiriyot you now have, each one of them, Orach HaYiriyah HaAchat, Shloshim Ba'ama, which means that it was 2 Amot longer than the first cover, and Rochav Arba Ba'ama, which means that the total of both sets of these coverings would be 11 times 4 instead of 10 times 4. Last time it was 10 Yiriyot of 28 by 4, which gave us 28 by 40. This is 11 yiriyot of 30 by 4, which gives us 30 by 44. So this is significantly larger. We now have an amma extra on each side. And clearly what's going to happen now will depend on the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nachman. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the extra amma now will cover the Mishkan all the way to the ground, just about. Right? except for the little bit that's lost on the diagonal. That etz balamala and the diagonal coming down. So now it's almost all covered. And according to Nachman, who said, no, you lost two amas, one on either side. According to him, we now finally get down to the silver. And we can cover up that extra amma. So that's as far as the etz sides are concerned, and we'll get to the back in a moment. So what you do is shadi or chayla put in a mishkan, take the length of this yiriyah, stretch it now over the width of the mishkan, which is of course how we did it, because the width we're calling the 4, and the length is the 28. Okay, kama havik latin, we start with 30. Dal esel igra, take 10 off. Pashlo esel haigis vesel haigis. You're now left with 10 and 10 on either side, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says, well, that covers the whole side, right? Mechas yamad adonim. At this point, we cover the silver. According to Nehemiah, we can now get up to the Adonim, because we were two amas up from the ground before, and now we have that extra arm on either side on top of the thickness of these of the wall, which brings us up to one arm above the Adonim, and Negoya, I mean one arm above the bottom of the carriage, which brings us to the top of the Adonim, but Megalia Amad Adonim, we never cover the silver with the second layer. Tanya Namihachi, the Ama Mizeh, the Ama Mizeh Ba'odev. So too, there's a brisa that discusses a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah, which confirms our understanding of their understanding, because what it says in this pasuk, v'ha'amamizeh ba'odef, ba'orek yiriyot ha'oel, yiyesa ruach ha'tzidei ha'mishkan, mizeh u'mizeh lakasoto. Now, so the Torah says beferish, the extra armor that you're getting out of the 30 on either side, as opposed to the 28, which should be used to cover what had been left uncovered. Says Rabbi Yehuda, what does that mean? L'chasot amah shel adanim, did Rabbi Yehuda, which is consistent with how we understood it. So it works out really very well. It's good to have this confirmation. We were saying undoubtedly they would have to argue about this. And indeed, we do find that they argue. Rabbi Nechemiah says that extra amah is l'chasot amah shel krashim. It's to cover the uncovered keresh, but it only touches the top of the adan. The silver was left uncovered, according to him.
The adan is already covered.
Correct. Yeah. Beautiful. Okay, now let's talk about the thickness multiplied by 11, which is now going down the length of the Mishkan. All right, Kamahabi. Arba imbi arba. We have 4 times 11 equals 44. The floor space of the Mishkan was 30 amas long. So dal latin leigra. Got to take off 30 amas. Pashuluhu arbasre. So you're now left with 14 amas. So that's a little bit too long, because even according to Rabbi Nechemiah, in the back of the Mishkan, even if you include the extra amma of the wall to the back, you still only have a total of 11. Here we've got 14. What are we going to do with that extra? Well, first of all, you're forgetting it. Dal tarte lekafla. Half of a yiriyah, in other words, two amot, need here to be bent over the top of the Mishkan as you face it. Because there it says, b'feirush v'chafalta et ha-yiriyah ha-shishit, that extra yiriyah that had been added to the Seder of the 5 yiriyot above and beyond the original yiriyot. So it says, b'feirush, take that and bend it over, v'chafalta et ha-yiriyah ha-shishit, take it and bend it over el mul p'nei ha-ohel. It should cover over the front of the ohel. Now this was again using the ohel, as we'll see, as a female walking with her dress dragging behind. This is the veil. And this hangs down above the top of the face of the Mishkan.
Hangs over or bends on itself?
No, hangs over. Hangs over. A pnei hangs over the front. Okay, so we're left, if that's the case, we have to take off 13. What's that?
Two amas.
Okay, so before we worry about the roof, that leaves us 12. Okay? Total of 12. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it makes sense because, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we have an extra 2 full amot. Because we can effectively ignore that etzba of the thickness of the top of the carriage. Ah, that explains why the pasuk continues by saying, V'serach ha'odeth b'yiriyot ha'oel, chatzi ha'yiriyah ha'odefet, tisrach al'achorei ha'mishkan. That's interesting. Chatzi ha'yiriyah ha'odefet, tisrach, meaning we've got exactly half of a yiriyah left, which is 2 amos, which will now be saruach, will be dragging, behind the Mishkan. But that only works out according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we took off 10 and we're left with 2, and 2 is a half of a yiriyah. But according to Rabbi Nachman, oh, wait a second, we lost an amma in the roof, because we had to go over an extra amma of the back wall, which according to him was a full amma thick on top. Why does it say chatziya yiriyah? Was that chatziya yiriyah? Was a single amma, and only a single amma that you should be tisrach ala korei ha-mishkan. So what is that supposed to mean? So my tisrach, Tisrach, that Tisrach means beyond what was there before. It doesn't mean Tisrach on the ground, meaning it should extend downwards behind the Mishkan of Hatziriyah, which is exactly what happened. There's still two amas extra above and beyond what was in the previous one. That's unavoidable. We had an extra full Uriah. I don't care how you work it out, an extra full Uriah. Half of which is put on the front, so half of which is dragging down in the back. What that dragging down does it cover partially the oven and partially go on the ground? That's not my business, and that's not what the Pasuk was coming to address. It was simply pointing out, I told you to take six instead of five on one of the chuvarot. Fine, what do you do with it? Half of it goes in the front, and half of it is hanging down in the back beyond the other one. And then you have to figure out what to do with it.
And you still have one arm
of which would be... Right, but that's not the point that the Torah is coming to address. Tanya Rebbe Yishmael, according to both Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Nechemiah, Lama Mishkan Doma, Le'isha Shemahalechet Beshuk. You have to see the Mishkan, because remember the essence of the Mishkan is to give over a sense of warmth. That's the whole point. Hayiti Mithalech Ba'olam B'Mishkan. The essence of the Mishkan is the fact that it's portable. And that's why the Orin, which is central to the meaning of the Mishkan, remember that they said you don't need an Orin. A Mishkan is made for the Orin, that's its whole point. So the Ohel, which is built around the Orin keeps in its walking ability at all times. Somebody who removes the Badim from the Orin is over on one of the Tayag Mitzvahs. It's an Issur D'oraisa, a law of D'oraisa to remove those Badim. Unfortunately, people do that all the time. Right? Oh, people think that the Torah is meant to stand still. It's essentially removing the body from the arm. The whole point of the arm is that it's meant to be mahalekah, that's halakha itself. It's what it walks. So the Mishkan, which is built around it, is meant to be a mitalek. Therefore, if you're looking at the Mishkan, you actually are meant to get a sensation of movement. So you're looking at a woman with her dress going behind her, so she's obviously walking. The dress is getting caught on the ground, so to speak. And this is the whole sense of the dynamic nature of a Mishkan that's mitalek. If you take a look at the way the krashim were made, clearly charutzim hayu hakrashim. The krashim were. What happened? Don't tell me after I printed that up. I left it behind. I made you that nice picture. No. Of course, tell me. What else? We have a picture here. Yes, here we go. Okay, so charutzim, since you had to create a peg like effect at the bottom of the keresh in order to fit into the two adadim, you're only going to be able to get the peg if you cut the wood around it. So charutz meaning through the middle and through the edges to create a peg. And then the aden, each aden fit on one peg, and you had two adadim at the bottom of each one of these krashim. Fit into the aden.
So you're saying that the bottom
of
the
carriage
is two pegs on the
end, one
on each side.
One on each side.
And then an
adanim
should be in the middle.
No, one in the middle. No, there would be two adanim along the entire length. It would cover here. This is what it would look like when the adanim were on. Those are the two adanim. So the pegs were offset to allow the adanim to fit and then cover entirely the bottom.
Other than the rest on the ground?
Maybe this is a single oven.
Yes, the bottom
of the carriage. What do you mean? No, this is completely wrong. No, really, this is fundamentally wrong. I don't understand what they're trying to do.
The bottom of the carriage.
What? Yeah, but he has a single oven with two holes. There was no such animal.
Well, there was, but it fit in alternate.
The silver thing has one hole.
There was two holes in the adan,
and two pegs on the
perish. Yeah. No, the number of adanim were double the number of krashim. This is the correct picture. Yeah. I don't see how you can do it any other way. Okay. So then chalulim hayu ha'adanim. Obviously, you had to have now a hole in the middle of the aden in order to establish the space for the peg to fit into the aden. the nir'im nikrashim b'lulaot, and now on a separate... Now, I mean, this is really outrageous. It's not just, not just wrong. I mean, it's just totally crazy. I mean, the whole point of the analysis in the parsha was that it was the ma'at ha'danim, kikar la'adan. The whole idea was to build it around the double adan la'adan. I have no idea what in the world the illustrator is thinking of over there. Well, this is a fascinating thing. I mean, the real nature over here is nikivat sovev gever, Kabbalistically speaking. The adan is female. The pegs are male. This is reflected in the third Beit HaMikdash with the entire Ezrat Nashim surrounding the Ezrat Anashim, Ezrat Yisrael, which becomes the equivalent of the Aden around the peg, right? But Lamaisa, surprisingly, in terms of the Tikkun of the Mishkan, it's the Nekeva that's the Aden. The master of the Mishkan is essentially Nekeva. That's why it describes her now as an Isha. That's Holechet. Because the whole idea of a Mishkan as a bayit is obviously Nekeva oriented. It has to be feminine. Only the female creates bayit. So this is an essential part of the whole tikkun of the egel. Remember, the Mishkan comes as the tikkun of the egel. The egel is fundamentally male worship, which is why none of the girls got involved at all. That was there was no gezeirah, there was no kilkel of the notion. They were given Rosh Chodesh because of the fact that they hadn't fallen for these various male masculine things throughout. But basically, the egel is a Grecian kind of view. It's not. It comes very much from outside. It's completely male. So we talk about bringing your son to the Baal is agalot yishakun. So entirely a vision of the maleness with its freedom and with its shooting out over the world and so on and so forth. So the idea of the Mishkan is the provision of bayit, which is why that which takes the place of the egel inside the Mishkan is dafka, the kruvin, which are male, but are also female. You need to have a male and a female. That was the union of the crew. That's the whole union. The Shekhinah will not appear unless there's a female joined to a male. You can't create the masculine imagery of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this became now, the whole idea of the Adanim was to establish Nekeva Tesoved Gever, which isn't expressed socially and mentally and so on until the third Beit HaMikdash. But you can clearly see in society as a whole, this development and the change that which needs to be a tikkun for the Gan Eden itself, which is the Ruyim Shalvah. That ends up gradually becoming part of the simple view of how a society develops, grows into its expression in the third Beit HaMikdash. But anyway, that's only because you asked. It's your fault. Tanur Rabbanan. Yiriyot HaTachtonot. It's interesting that the lower Yiriyot appear to be much more sophisticated in terms of how they were made. I mean, they were Tchelet, Argaman, Talat Shani, Sheish. Did I skip something? Okay. Oh, sorry, I skipped that first line. On another note, v'nir in krasin belulaot kikochavim berakia, that when you put the buttons, these are like peg buttons, that would go through the loops at the edge of the machborot of the yiriyot, when you would look up, the metal would shine and look like stars in the heavens. Okay, but that has nothing to do with the adonim, with the krasin. Tun Rabban, Yiriyot HaTachtonot, the lower Yiriyot, which appear to be very difficult to make, Tchelet, Argaman, Talat Shani, Sheish, the Elyonot, I mean, that's the simplest thing. I mean, it's a Maaseizim. Maaseizim is a very low quality, it seems to be like a protective canvas or something or other. And yet, strangely enough, Gdolah Chochma, Sheneemra be'Elyonot Yoter Mimar Sheneemra be'Tachtonot. If you take a look at the pasuk, it's clear that it was more difficult to make the upper layer than to make the lower layer. Because by the Tachtonot it says, V'chol isha chachmat lev biyadeha tavu, and so on. And there it says, V'yavyu matveha tchelet argamantum atashadim ashesh, and so on. Mashen ken bi'ilu be'Elyonot k'tiv. Instead of simply saying v'chol isha chachmat lev, it said v'chol hanashim asher nasali banu tana bechokma, which is obviously a higher darga to be lifted up into chokma by your heart. How could that be? Well, note what it says: tavu et ha'izim. That means, standing shem Rabbi Nechemia, indeed tavu et ha'izim, shatuf beizim v'tavu min ha'izim. The material was formed into a thread on the eis. So that when you were making the Yiriyot Izim, it was almost as if you had lifted the animals themselves to be on the Mishkan. Obviously, you cut it off of their skin. And yet, it needed to be made directly from the animal. While it was still on it. So it was washed, so to speak, bleached, and twisted while it was attached to the eis. Now, obviously, the idea over here is with all of the materials, is the extent at which the material reflects its source. And, you know, sometimes the inyanim of the trellis. In a sense, the A's was as much connected to its formation here in Yerotizim as the Tchelet was, which was the height of the other things. It was only coloration. You know, and yet its source is meant to be so fundamental. Shtei Gezusrot, getting back to our mission, remember we were talking about Hotza'ah. Now, these two Gezusrot which are thrown in here are basically irrelevant to our Sugya, except with the fact, I don't want to bring it in, we're actually getting back to our favorite topic, which is the Yagalot. We bring it in over here because we're going to define the width of the Rishut HaRabim and the length of the Rishut HaRabim, so we mention it, but the fact is we need to deal with this issue anyway. Because we're going back to discuss what we sort of left open yesterday, and as our president asked yesterday, what exactly are the Tzideim, and what are the Tachteim, and what are the Neim. Today we're going to go into this brighter. Omer Rav Mishum HaBechim. Agalot Tachteihem, Uveinehem, Betzideihem, Rishut HaRabim. We said yesterday that beneath the Agalot, which turned out to be an Agalah of girder that had no flat bed in it at all, and that had spaces that were left uncovered, that area in between them was a Rishut HaRabim. Under them, I mean, was Rishut HaRabim. Ubeinehem, between the two wagons as they were traveling side by side, and not only that, but even Tzideihem, which would be the distance between the wheel and the body of the Agalah itself, even that was all Rishut HaRabim. Now, let's try to understand this. Before we try to understand it, we need to zero in a little bit better on the shape of the Agalah, because I've been very simplistic until now. The truth is, there is very important machlokes about how to understand this also. Actually, the idea of the five Ama Agalah, and so on and so forth, is really supported only by Tosaf Shita. Rav's Shita is that each Agalah, the bed of the Agalah itself, is only 2.5 Amas, and an additional 1.25 Amah for the wheel assembly on each side, which gives you another 2.5 Amas, so that the total, including the wheels, is 5 Amas. Okay? Not as we described it yesterday. Tarsus, however, has a very different way of looking at the whole circle. He doesn't like the idea of the Krashim being unsupported at all. Notice, because even the way that we had extended it yesterday, which is an extension of Tosfos Shita, to have the Krashim at least not going over the wheel assemblies, is insufficient for Tosfos. So therefore, Tosfos says, look, clearly what they did was, this was a double truck. It was not a single truck. They took two Agalot, connected them together. By connecting two Agalot together, remaining with the remaining wheel assemblies in the middle to provide support, you had four wheels, and this was basically one of these 18 wheel riggers, you know.
Wait, one behind the other.
No, next to each other. And two units like this next to each other, so that the four Agalot became two. So what you really had, excepting the pshat, that the actual girder area was only 2.5 Amas, you had really a full 10 Amas to cover the entire carriage, except that in the middle there was a wheel assembly. Well, who cares about the middle? The point is, the carriage, if you imagine the two wagons side by side, joined permanently with a long board on each side, the carriage would go from the edge of the girder work on one, 2.5 Amas, cross the wheel assembly of one, 2.5 Amas, according to this, not full 2.5 Amas, each wheel, not 1.25 like Rashi. The next wheel assembly, 2.5, that's 5, 2.5 plus 5, would then continue on to 2.5 of the other girder assembly till the edge, so that it was fully supported by girders, and in the middle was held up by a very thick wheel assembly of four wheels. Now this makes a lot more sense, Anastasia. We're going to have something of this enormous weight piled up like this, sitting around, teetering on the edge of something going over sand dunes in a Mishkan. It's ridiculous. It's got to be that it was made in a way that would be supportive of the question. But we don't talk supernatural. The whole point of the Mishkan is that it's meant to work. So that's the only way to make it work. That must have been the way that they did it. So he, therefore, because it will have a completely different approach to the sugya. So it's important now, we'll take these two, there's other approaches. We'll take these two basic approaches for the Agalah. Either Rashi's half-size Agalah, essentially, compared to what we were talking about yesterday, in which a single Agalah is only 2.5, and a wheel assembly is only 1.25, literally half of what we were talking about. And we'll also take Thursus's approach, in which we have basically the full 10 Amas, and indeed each wheel assembly is 2.5 Amas, which really would leave, if there were a single agalah, it would leave us with 7.5 amas for each fully complete agalah. The entire setup was 15 amas across. The 15 amas across, of course, this is fundamentally important. One of the main reasons we're doing this is because we're trying to figure out where you get 16 amas in a Rosh Hashanah, which is how all is, according to Rashi, there's everything is just, I mean, why the heck would we do it that way to get 16 amas? Not to mention the fact that according to Rashi, as Tosfos points out, if you have two separate assemblies and you've got 10 amas of krashim lengthwise across two agalot, that means that as these agalot are driving down the street, they're knocking down everything on the side of the edges, which is really quite a wonderful way to design a thing like this. Right? When we were imagining a machane, and you've got these trucks driving down with the Mishkan, and everybody's yelling, "Get out of the way!" And it goes, what's the meaning of such a thing? Everybody ducking. How could we be finer as around in such a funny way? That's a very good point. Like, well, then you have at least 20 amas there, because you've got two sets of 10 krashim, plus whatever distance you need in between. And we'll see, we need it, of course, to perfect. What's that? No, but they have to continue from the middle on front, up front, before everybody else moves. Yeah. Right? Now, all the other people, depending on how you understand the, that it goes. They didn't literally lead, but depending if the whole machina then joined up in the shape of a keresh, instead of, it's a machlokus, whether it became now a line or whether it just walked as they were. But no matter what, I mean, we understand that the meaning of an agalah and understanding the nature of the Shizarab is that it's meant to drive down the Shizarab. Even if you can connect logistically a situation in which only midgets lived in the edges or they never drove the agalot until everybody had already moved, or whatever you want to say, I mean, but it's, as a model, it's absurd. So therefore, of course, there's only one set that we would do like this. Right? Okay. So, taking this in mind, so let's go back now to Rashi's chat. Oh, Rabbi, Bein agalah la'agalah, ki malei eref agalah, oref agalah, v'kama oref agalah, chavesh amot. So the total space between one wagon and the other wagon would be the equivalent of the length of each wagon. Okay. So how much was the length of each wagon? Chamesh amot, as we already analyzed. This everybody agrees to, because that's the only way to understand the sugya earlier. Huh? The only way to understand the sugya earlier, I mean, now that you're a movie star, don't you think that you... I know, I've been seeing movies about you all over the place. Something about sponges and bobs and
building.
So we have the two sets of the krashim balanced within that five. Everybody's worried about that five. So that length, okay, that's a given. But what we're saying over here, between the agalah and the one next to it, was also five amas. The first question we have is, why was the agalah five amas? Forget about our statement. Let's talk about what the statement was based on, namely that the length of an agalah was 5 amas. Why do you need 5 amas? What would we need 5 amas for? I mean, certainly under any circumstances, we should be able to get along perfectly well. The arba upalga tsari would be enough to have only 4.5, and that would be fine. Now, we don't really need 4.5, do we? Because what we came out with yesterday is that we're going to put them not flat, we're going to put them on their edges. Right? So we put them on their edges, we add an additional ama in between. Okay. So I mean, we don't even need 4.5, I would think. What do we need 4.5? Okay, but look, I mean, the truth is, even the way we're doing it, you want to have space for the brifim that are sticking out, that are batim labadim. Actually, but if I have 4.5, that would be fine. I mean, it would be enough space to protect the krashim from movement toward the griffin. So, okay, the tabaot would also be protected. Why do I need 5? Kekhdololitfaku krashim. What does this mean, kekhdololitfaku? Rashi has a very strange explanation. Why would they be litfaku? Gentlemen, are we here? Do we have a good picture of this in our minds? There is a picture? This is Thursday, though. This is shot. Is there another picture? By the way, this is a very nice picture of Tosa's approach. Right here on the top of your page, Yud Beit. So you have your... you've got it there in an article. It's just in that. So these are the two agalot side by side with the Grashim going from one end to the other. See? Double wheel assembly in the middle, one wheel on each side.
This would join this.
Yes, that's what that large thing is. I have no idea, you know, why it's sticking out like that, and why the wheel is. I mean, this is not really all that accurate, but let's pretend it's accurate. I don't know why it's so difficult to get a simple diagram in front of it. Why you can't make an accurate?
This happens in Kachin too.
What?
In Kachin too, all these pictures of our.
What's that?
In Kachin too, we have the same
problem. In Kachin. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, this approximately causes this effect, right? All that's wrong is the width of the wheel assembly. And the fenders. So is there a picture of ration here? So at least we can get this straight. No, yeah, this is good. This is ration. But to be discussed later, this particular this raises some issues. Yeah. I wish I had graphic skills.
We're
talking about a very simple situation in which we have a girder work which is 5 arms long, 2.5 arms wide. Forget about the wheels right now for all intents and purposes. According to Rashi, the kreshim were stacked up on their edge. Their edge is 1 arm thick. They were back to back. 2 sets back to back gives us 4. Obviously, we don't want to only have the 4 and 4. We also have the tabaot facing each other and so on. We need that extra half an amma. Fine, take the extra half an amma. But why a whole amma? That's our question. Why would we need 5 ammas? The Gemara answers so that the kreshim don't bump into each other, which bothers Rashi. How the heck would they bump into each other? Remember, according to Rashi, they're set up as a paperclip. That was the whole point. They're supporting each other on the edges. Why would they bump into each other? Right, so Rashi says a funny thing. He says they'll bump into each other just in case one day you decide to put the kreshim down on their width instead of on their edge. You know, so then they would bump into each other. I mean, you know, Shtosma says, I mean, what was that supposed to mean? Maybe you'll decide one day. For what purposes would you decide one day? Okay, so Shtosma says, look, I mean, the idea is you have something that's extremely heavy. You go over a bump, and they're knocked into each other. We're trying to avoid damage. We have a very expensive building over here. I mean, so what's the problem? So we want extra space. We really need to come out with such a funny ukimta that maybe we'll set it up in a different way. And we'll see later on that we clearly were concerned about movement of the kreshim because we had people that were appointed to walk along the edges to make sure that it was constantly forced back into place so that nothing would fall off eventually. So it's perfectly reasonable. As a matter of fact, the mistake in Peretz Be'uza was treating the Aron the way we treated the kreshim. It wasn't treating it without any respect, but it wasn't treating it like the Aron was supposed to be Hosea's kreshim. But there always were Levim walking at the side to make sure that everything would be all right, as we'll see. I mean, it could be that's why Rashi doesn't like it does this thing, but we'll see. There is in the Gemara concern for the movement. Okay, so what do we need it? Barba Pagas. I'm going to take a look at the question. Okay, now, let's take a look at the sides. Omer of it. Sidei Agala, Kemole Rochav Agala. According to Rashi, this means the wheel plus the wheel assembly is the thickness of the agala, meaning both wheels and wheel assemblies together equals 2.5 amos, which gives you 1.25 amma for each wheel and its axle. According to Tosfos, this means no. Each side of the agala, the wheel assembly to the edge, the outside edge of the wheel, was 2.5 amos, which would mean that in total, if there were such an animal as a single agala, it would be 7.5 amos wide. But there is no such animal as a single agala, according to Tosfos, because we plug them together anyway, which means that the entire unit was 15 amas wide, because it was comprised of 4 wheel assemblies of 2.5 amas apiece, which gives you 10, plus 2 girder assemblies of 2.5 amas apiece, which is another 5, for a total of 15 amas across, supporting the kreshim exactly over the edges of the girder work, and the wheels would then stick out beyond the edges of the kreshim on either side, 2.5 amas. Okay. But you've got a much more secure base. All right. So that's according to Rava what it means, major machlokas. The comma, when I say it's the same as the thickness of the agala, what do I mean by the thickness of an agala? Shtei amot v'mechza. Asks the Gemara, and this is fundamental to Tosfos' understanding why he can't stand Rashi's approach. Lumally, why would I need 2.5 amos? Ba'amto al-gasag, it would be enough to have an amma and a half. Asks Tosfos, now tell me what in the world that's supposed to mean according to Rashi. That it makes a great deal of sense to support a 10-amma-long keresh I mean, after all, why would you need so much space in the middle? If you're going to be playing seesaw, heck, you might as well have an axle. Is that the question? Obviously, the wider it is in the middle, the more supportive it's going to be for the carriage. What kind of funny question is this? I mean, the carriage, according to Rashi, is basically wobbling along without any support on the edges, as if it's not bad enough that we only gave it 2.5 in the middle of the 10-mile-long thing. The Gemara come along and say, you can really get along with 1.5. Why? Why could I only get along with 1.5? It should have been just the opposite. Why not make it a little wider in order to get better support? So this is really, really odd. All right, so Rashi has to come along and say that, are you asking maybe we might have to put a carriage down lengthwise one day? You know, just as an emergency to drag it off to the hospital, I suppose, with alarms blaring. But then a carriage is only 1.5, so you'd have it completely supported by 1.5 girder work. This is really, really problematic. I mean, why would you say this? Okay. So, therefore, okay, so the Gemara answers. So there, I'm sorry, but therefore Tosfos says, of course, that can't be what it means. It's got to be assuming my type of construction, where you've got basic support on all sides. And therefore, it's asking why it has to come all the way out to the edge. Understandable. Answers the Gemara. Well, in case you couldn't figure it out, these krashim are going to be loose, and they're going to be swinging up and down on either side if you don't have a broad enough center to support them. According to Tosfos, it means not exactly lidadu like a seesaw, but lamaisa lidadu. You want them supported by the very edge, so that the edge keeps them in place, not that they're sticking over something. And then they're more likely to fall apart. Look, I mean, if you put up a roof rack, you're careful to do the same thing. You don't want things sticking out over the edge, even if they are tied down. It's not, you want it to be supported by the edge of your roof rack. And that's exactly what we get over here. So let me ask you something, says the Gemara. Now that you're saying that this was the construction, so Elat Kaimalat, Derek Rishutar Abim Shesh Esrei Amah. You're claiming that a Rosh Hashanah has to be 16 amas wide. And we learn everything out of the Mishkan, right? That's where we're learning Otsan Akmos. Ananda Gamile the Mishkan. You just described, basically, something that is only 15 amas wide. Because when you're talking about, according to Rashi, that you have two agalot walking side by side with the krashim in the middle. Now let's take a look at that picture that you had over there. With the krashim in the middle. Where was it? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Was there, you had that picture. Yes. With the krashim in the middle, you still, lechora, from edge to edge of the wheels. Please look at this carefully. Edge to edge from the wheels. Forget about what's sticking out over this side. That's the part that Tosfos is saying is going to be knocking down the TVs as it's driving. But as far as the road is concerned, the wheels going along the road would only be 15 amas. Because you've got, according to Rashi, 2.5 and 2.5 for the actual body, 2.5 total on each side. Obviously, you have to leave enough room for the krashim that are jutting out 2.5 on each side, because the whole thing is only 5, when the carriage is 10, so that if you have the other 5 balanced between 2.5 on one side of the agala, 2.5 on the other side of the agala, same thing on the other agala, 2.5 here, 2.5 here, that gives you 5 amas between the agalot because of the krashim that is sticking out, 2.5 of the body of the agalot, which is covered by keresh, and then you have the additional 2.5, which is comprised of 1.25 and 1.25 on each end because of the wheels. So you're still only talking about 15 amas, not 16 amas. Where do you get the 16 amas from?
From one extreme wheel to the other.
From one wheel to the other, because you have a total of 20.
We don't count the space of the krashim, but...
Well, that's what Tosfos is standing on Rashi. Exactly. According to the way you're doing, you're saying, let's ignore those krashim sticking out over the edge. I mean, that's really wonderful. Try taking a trailer truck down the street and ignore the krashim sticking on the edge and see where that'll get you in jail. You know, so.
Well, Tosfos, 2 wagons and 1 with the car plus the axle.
According to Tosfos, the idea over here is you've got 15 amos in the total structure. You don't have 2 krashim. have one crushing in the middle of two wagons with an additional 2.5 armors of a wheel structure on one side, 2.5 armors of a wheel structure on the other side, driving very comfortably down the street without any problem here at all. Whereas Rashi's got two side-by-sides. Yeah. But the difference is that Rashi not only has side-by-side, he's got this oversized board sticking out on either side over people's homes, right? Which doesn't make any sense. That was his diagnosis. But according to both Rashi and Tosafot, however we learn, how exactly do you get now 15 on this, as you said? 16 armors. We only have 15 armors.
Put space in between the
Talmud. What's that?
Put space in between the
Talmud. Oh, so now this again will be a Machlokes because Rashi and Tosafot. Answers the Gemara, Amma Yetera Havoi. You have to allow for an extra Amma there in order that a Ben Levi can have access to that area. If he Mishtalfe Krushim, if there was any movement of these Krushim, and then he was able to, having Nakikla, he was able to keep them in their place before they would move over. This is why they were called crushing, because any Ben Levi between them was crushed. Can you imagine risking your life in between those crushing? You can just see these wagons bumping up and down, the Levi sitting over there, coming at him from either side. According to Rashi, obviously not according to Tosafot, because there was no in between the two wagons. You know, everything is perfectly balanced. So the only problem, according to Tosafot, would be falling forwards or backwards on the wagon itself. Not falling off of the Tosafot. He says that the idea over here is you had a shoulder. And even though a person cannot fit into a half an arm of the shoulder, but if he sees there's a problem, he can simply signal the driver to go over to the side, and he can get on that side. Also, says Tosafot, I mean, undoubtedly to stick himself in there. He had a tool, you know, to grab them, you know, a long pole that would grab them and push them into shape or hold them into the fall. So one arm or shoulder would allow you enough wiggle room that when you needed to, you could stick something in the edge and have the wagon pull over a little bit so you could...
It's a flat tire, exactly.
Exactly. There was enough room to have it pull over on the street for you to be able to work on it. We obviously couldn't have a wagon that was all the way up to the edges of the street. That doesn't make any sense.
It'd be a pretty big gun.
A long pole.
No,
not necessarily, because it's the same as if your car starts to roll. In other words, if you realize that you haven't put your brake on, you turn behind you, and it starts to roll, if it hasn't rolled for more than a second, you can stop it. Even though you're a little guy, I mean, but you can still hold that car. It's only once there's some inertia built up. You say, no, you keep your eye on it. You see where it's getting a little bit loose. One of them maybe is moving off. It's already an inch over. You don't want that to happen. So you nudge it. And since the whole thing is moving, it's very open to nudges. So we use the Ben Levi to nudge. Chuliyat habor vahasela shehin gvohin asaran urchavan arba'a anotel mihem vanotin al gavan chayav v'pachot became patur. Here's an interesting Mishnah that once again does its best to confuse us by creating two separate cases, but where one of the cases has something in it of the other case, just to drive you nuts. Simply speaking, you would say that if you want to explain to somebody that if you've got a hole in the ground, which is arba amas by ten tefach, or if you've got a large rock, which is 4 amas by ten tefach high. So whether you're talking about a rock or a hole, which is connected to Krushim and the Adonim that we had before, it's the same din. It'll have a din of a Rishus HaYachid, no matter where it is. That's all you need to say. But no, the Mishnah's got to say it in a way that is absolutely maddening, because it talks about not the bor, which is the way to talk about it, but the choliyat habor. The choliyat habor generally means the built-up area that is made from whatever you remove from the hole and built up around the hole, the way generally we surround a well with wood or with stone and so on. Why are you talking about that? You certainly didn't mean from the top. You said on it. You meant from the top of the choliyat. That's the same case of the sela. So ignore that part. Just tell me, bor shu amok, asaret vaker. Rebbe's trying to do something over here, which you're going to have to figure out what this means. So I know, tell me, and I know, tell me, and no doubt it mixes it from them. I mean, not from them. It's, each one of them is different. What do you mean, you put al gaban? You don't put al gaban, you put a bor betokhan. I mean, it's confusing. Pachot became, however, it's less than four and it's less than 10, then you would be potter. Ask the Gemara, can you tell me why you did that? Why are you driving us crazy? Just say Habor Vasela. Oh, this comes to me tremendous Kiddush. Suppose your local space consists of 10 by 4, but from outside it doesn't consist of 10 by 4. You're sitting in a bar. As far as you're concerned, that's your world. There it is, 10 by 4. Nowadays you'd be lucky. Now, if I'm looking at you from the outside, I don't see no 10 by 4. I see like a little 2 foot high, I mean, a 1 foot high wall. It's because you got that extra hole down on the bottom that you think it's that deep. The Mishnah is telling you that we define it from its inside. So the bar, because ultimately it is, in fact, 10 deep, including the chuya, doesn't have to be relative to the ground level of Rishat HaRabim. It, in fact, has mechitza of asara. If you're inside of it, you see a mechitza of asara. That's Rishat HaRabim.
9 down and 1 up.
Well, whatever. 9 down and 1 up, 5 down, 5 up, however you want to do it. So the bar of chuya ta is mechtafim la'asara. Tangin amiyochi, bar of Rishat HaRabim. Amuka asara. Urchava arba'a. Ein mimalim himena b'shabbat. Ella in Ken Asula Mechitzot Gvot Asarat Fachim. You'd have to build around the bar also a mechitza in order to allow the entire area to be within its own Rishut HaYachid, and then you're not taking out of Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim when you're memalei. Even though, and this is important, normally in order to take water out of a bor, you don't need for it to be in Rishut HaYachid. There's a special construct called Pasei Beiraot. And Tosfos is indeed very disturbed. But why do we not simply give you the Pasei Beiraot construct? Pasei Beiraot is a different type of mechitza in which the edges of the mechitza define the entire mechitza. In other words, if you take four corner edges, what do you call those? Like the, you know, when you make picture albums, what do they call those? Come on. Oh, come on, guys, don't do this to me. I lose words more and more now. I'm so crazy. Anything where you put an edging on something. What do you go? No, that.
How many syllables?
Sounds like it.
All right, well, whatever.
What materials are made
of? Wood, usually. Well, you want to put something along the edge to have a nice edge.
Molding?
It's close.
Edging of the border.
Yeah. All right, but anyway. So you're talking about a tall, whatever it is, little corner things. And you put these corner things on all four sides. We'll learn all about them in Erevin, their size, what's the minimum size, and so on. Usually that's sufficient to draw from a bar. But as Tosfos explains, there's two important criteria for such a bar that are not met over here. First of all, so he says, which we'll see, it has to be Mayim Chayim. In other words, it can't just be a cistern. And it has to be public. Can't be private. Over here you're talking about it's not public, it's not meant for people on the road. You want to carry from it, and it's just storing water. You'd have to have 10 tefachim, real, normal mechitza around it to turn it into Rishut HaYachid. And if you want to drink from it directly, you don't have such a mechitza. In shoftim emena b'shabbat, elin ken ichnis lo rosho v'rubo. You can't drink from it by putting your head over it. You'd have to have your head and your body over it, because as we saw before, we are always cautious you're going to end up carrying the cup from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim. And here's the part that's important to us. Ubor v'chuyata mitztarfim la'asara. And that's the Tanya Nami Avi. The inside of the bar plus the raised area around the bar are mitztarif to this measurement of 10 tefachim. All around it.
Doesn't have to be.
All around it, not in it. Around it and you.
Is what it is. If you're inside it.
No. If you're outside it and you want to draw water out of it, then you and the bar together have to be surrounded by your own 10 tefachim mitzvah. So that the bor and you are in a Rishus
HaYochi. Okay, but the previous words, Eli Kena Samachit Sasar Tzvachim.
Those are the bits, what I've been talking about.
But is including with the Chulia.
Has nothing to do with the Chulia.
So the Mechitza itself has to be a Sar Tzvachim?
The Mechitza is nowhere near the Chulia. The Mechitza is 50 feet away from the Chulia. You have to surround the bor with a Mechitza that you can stand inside of. Not inside the bor, inside the mechitza. You're creating a yard.
Okay.
With a bor in it.
The yard has to be mechitza, so it's
all. Yeah, that's all. Forget about the bor. Now you don't have to worry about the bor, because whatever the bor is, it's just the Rishus HaYochid, the inner Rishus HaYochid, which has no meaning.
And so in which case is the bor before Yosef Mitzrayim and Lassar?
Is irrelevant.
But which case was the case?
That's not that case. This is bor before Yosef to describe, and what do we mean by a bor, a bor where the chulia is also included in the measurement of that Lassar.
Is it
No, that depends. If you will recall the difference between a Carmelite and a Malkum Keturah. Less Nasrav, it still has Arba'ah, then it's a Carmelite. If it doesn't have Arba'ah, then it's a Malkum Keturah. If it has precisely nine in the Rishat Rabim, it becomes part of the Rishat Rabim, so on and so forth. All of it that we went into at great length in the first place.
Standard means it becomes Rishat
Latzma. Yeah. 10 by 4 is Rishat Latzma. Boy, Mine, Rav Mordechai, Mi Rav. Mordechai asked Rav, how about if you've got a column in the middle of Rishat Rabim? It's Gavoa Asara. It's Roch of Arba'ah, okay? That's Rishat Hayakid? Yes, indeed. Now, Zorik V'Nach Al Gabav, you take a ball and you throw it to land on top of that Amud. Ma. Do we say, look, you've got an Akira and a Hanacha, Bisur, because when you start in Rishat Rabi, you land in Rishat Yachid, you should be Chayiv. Or do we say that in order for that ball to land on that Amud, it had to have gone above the Amud before landing on it? If it went above the Amud, that means it's making a landing from a Makom Keturah. The question is, are you chayev if you make a landing out of a Malkum Keturah onto a Rishut HaYachid after having taken off from a Rishut HaRabim? That's our question. Now, on the surface, this should not be a question at all, because we already spoke about Hamotzi Mechanut LePlatya Derech Sratya and so on, right? Sratya Derech Platya, we talked about that. And we said, if you're Motzi or you're Zorek, you would be chayev. Why in the world don't we say that? You went through the Stav, into the Kikar. So that means you have to go from Rishat HaYachid, passing through a Makom Keturah, into a Rishat HaRabim, and we said, you're chayav. That's exactly that case. There's many explanations in the Rishonim for why this might not be exactly that case. Tosis is pshat, and this is specifically why I talked to you about taking off and landing. Tosis is pshat is that there's a difference between taking off and landing and flying through. In other words, it's a fascinating idea. If I throw something up, when it falls, it's falling because what it is, the energy that I put into it to let it escape gravity, is over. It now falls because of its gravitational attraction, not because I threw it there. So therefore, what happened is, fascinating idea, what happens is you created a trajectory. It now falls, and that falling is falling out of Rishut, which is a Makom Keturah. So Bishlema, if you impel it through a Makom Keturah, that indeed is Hamotzi Mechanut LePlatya Derech Stav. And there we said, Azorek is Chayim. But if you impart a trajectory which then allows gravity to pull it down from a Makom Keturah, why would that necessarily be the same as the case of Zorek through? This is Rav Porat's idea in Tosfos. Fascinating way of looking at it.
So gravity is like a Shutaf to...
Yeah, in other words, this is called koach kocho. When you put something into a position in which it is then guaranteed to land in a particular way because of simple physics, but it does no longer requires the energy of your, the current energy that you put into it, that's called koach kocho. If it still is directly expressive of your energy, that's called kocho. There's many, many nafkaminas between kocho and koach kocho. Koach kocho essentially is the Gemara's description of potential energy. So because I raised this particular level, the energy that was imparted into it is now going to be expressed in its form, correct? That's koach kocho. How do I know that you're chayav on koach kocho? In the case of Amotzi, Mechanut LePlatya Derech Stav, that comes along. That's my question, says Rav Mordechai. That's brilliant. Others learn that the Gemara could have brought a raya from the Braita before of Hamotzi Mechanut LePlatya Derech Stav, but Rav Mordechai hasn't heard that Braita, and we don't want to use a Braita because we think that it's a Mishnah, so we go directly to the Mishnah. And there's many other fascinating approaches as to how this could work or why it would be different, but let's be satisfied with those two.
Yeah, every time you throw this cover, you get Arba, you get Shlok, so every time you do that, you're counting out of the down as much as you have.
Okay, but we don't usually come out of a Makom Keturah. That could be. Usually it's irrelevant to us. But over here it's coming from a Makom Keturah. Oh, Barley. So Rava said to him, what's your problem, man? I mean, that's a Mishnah. That's a Mishnah. It says right here, Hanotel Mihem, Hanotel Agaban Chayav. Now you tell me how you could put something down on a stone which is 10 tefachim high without coming from the top of the stone. So, I understand what you're asking. You don't know how to read? So, if Mordechai said, how does get us? No one's talking about. He went in and he asked Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says to him, I understand. Isn't that a Mishnah? Oh, no, not another one of these guys. So he goes and he asks Abaya. Also, Shalal Abaya. Abaya says to him, isn't that a Mishnah? He says, you guys all learn to spit in the same place. Was enough one guy spat on this thing? I don't need three of you. What does this have to do with the Mishnah? Omrulay says, I understand. Well, you don't think it's a Mishnah? Read the Mishnah. Wait a minute. The Mishnah might be talking about a needle. A needle. It's still three-dimensional. What's the matter with you? He has your own medallion ports. I don't care how thin it is. I mean, we ain't talking about flatland. What are you talking about? Theoretical line? Is that what we're talking about? We're talking about something that extends in three dimensions. If it extends in three dimensions, something has got to be in the Makom Torah. I don't care how thin you make it. But it's got to get up there in order to land. Yeah. Well, now it may very well be the Yidle Mursha. Look, it's a stone. The case in the Mishnah is a rock. The rock is at the flat, perfectly flat top. Doesn't a stone have like a little edge maybe that comes down at an angle? So that edge would still constitute part of the stone, which is Rosh HaYochid. As now, let's break down this into a strobe lit motion. Needle is approaching the edge of the rock. It comes right across the landing area, which is that part that's extending downward into the area of the Rishat HaRabim. Lands right on that Mursha. It's now inside the airspace of Rishat HaYachid. Continues on to a perfect stop in front of the terminal, which is on top of the stop. Perfect. But it never came, never landed from no Makom Torah. It landed right on the edge. So maybe that was the case. I asked you about an Amud, and you bring me a Ryan from a Sela. Maybe that's why I talked about a Sela, not an Amud. And you know what else is characteristic of Selaim? Cracks. So here we're talking about a needle, and it's being piloted by remote control directly into that crack, comes into the crack, it comes up and lands on top. But when it's in the crack, it's inside of a Jodayaki. And maybe that's why it talks about a Sela, is to avoid the problem of the Makom Torah. Now I'm asking you, what about if it's an Amud? Inami the Rami of a Chavitza, so it goes straight through a crack in the rock. What?
Didn't understand, but they didn't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. Amrav Misha. Boy, Rabbi Yochanan, Kotel Brushit Rabin Gavoa Asara Ve'in Rachav Arba. Now that you're talking about the incorporation of the area that's making the Chuliyah Sabor with the area of the Bor itself into one Rishos, another fascinating question to ask. What's the din of the area that makes a different area to the Rishos? You got a wall. The wall itself is 10 tefachim high, but it's not 4 tefachim wide. It's a wall. So in and of itself, it would be a Makom Torah. Initially, it's a wall that is built around a Carmelite. And if it's built around a Carmelite, so it clearly a Carmelite doesn't have any dinim that should turn the wall into Rishut HaYachid. I mean, that's not our question. And then you went ahead and you turned it into Rishut HaYachid. At this point, how do I look at it? I take something, I throw it on top of the wall. Now, I could say, in throwing it on top of the wall, I threw it onto a Makom Torah. Because, Miyamim Tima Deinu Makom Rachav Arba, it's a Makom Torah. Or do I say, now, wait. This wall defines the Rishut HaYachid beyond the wall. So, I mean, it couldn't define Rishut HaYachid without itself becoming part of the structure that it's defining. Are we going to separate now the wall from its own construct? So maybe we should say, Kivan Da'asol Rishut HaYachid, Kaman Damali Danya. Basically, Rishut HaYachid, we can view it as being filled with Rishut HaYachid ether. And that includes the wall itself. So we have one solid Rishut HaYachid for all intents and purposes. What's the difference to us if there's a hole in the middle? And if the Rishut HaYachid extended upwards, and we could no longer discern the wall from the Rishut HaYachid, once I make Rishut HaYachid, it extends upwards anyway. So what's the meaning of the wall as a separate entity? Therefore, in defining the Rishut HaYachid, it becomes part of the Rishut HaYachid. Whereas before, when it was a Carmelite, you're right, a Carmelite, first of all, is not Mali. It doesn't extend upwards. Don't talk to me about a Carmelite L'mala Me'asara. There's nothing above 10 that's going to have any din of Rishus when it comes to Carmelite. But the moment you turned it into Rishut HaYachid, now you created a problem. Or Marula says, Ula, well, I mean, listen, from a moral point of view, I mean, if it's a Kal V'Chomer, if it makes a Mechitza for others, it should at least be able to make a Mechitza for itself. Of course, we could have turned around and said, look, the Chanina B'Daisa was Mazin Kol Eilam Kulo for himself. It was Dailo B'Kav Charumim. apparently the Gemara doesn't really think this is a moral issue. So in other words, in defining that space, it itself has to at least be part of what its own definition is. So how could it be that it shouldn't be a reshut yakid? It marnam yom rabkiya barashi yom rav, v'kein yom rabkiyitzik yom rabkiyochanan. Indeed, a kotel, reshut rabim, gavoa asarab in rachav arba'ah, and now it's only mukaf l'karmelit, because when you build a kotel in reshut rabim, and you surround an area which is not made for inhabitation, it's more than two beit satayi, it does not create a reshut yakid, it creates a karmelit. Now, when you turn it into Rishut Yachid, at that moment, Azorek v'naf ha-gabav chayav. Why? Li'acherim osem mechitza la'atzmolok o'shikein. That's exactly what Ula was saying. All right, gentlemen, it's been a tough day, and we're still exactly as far behind as we were yesterday. But at least we didn't fall further behind. And at least Dr. Spolsky was able to study. Ah, yeah, we're going to have to work out our schedule. We got a double problem this week. We can't learn Moshe Shabbat. Okay, now shtipu tayelu urche lebishkin kama havi, 44. Dal tlatim igra, pashlu 14. Dal tarte le kakla, dekhti vekafalta tayiriya shishita mupne oil, pashlu tarte sre. So bishra nu rabiyuda hainu dekhtif chatsiya yiriya ho defa tisrach. Al rem lechemya, it's not, it's only one amad, no tisrach. Tisrach li chav lo teha. Tana tebe rabi yishma, lumar mishkan bume, yisha shemahalechet bishuk, vishipoleo mehalchin achareha. Tana rabon, charutzim hayu krashim. וחלולים היו האדמים, ונראים קרסים בלולאות ככוכבים מברקיע. תנו רבונן, יריות התחתונות של תחילת משל הגמן ושתר השני ושל שש, עליונות של מעשה עזים, וגדולה חוכמה שנאמרה בעליונות יותר ממה שנאמרה בתחתונות. ואילו בתחתונות כתיב בכל אישה חוכמת לב בידי התאבות, ואילו בעליונה כתיב בכל אנשים שנעשה ליבן אותנה בחוכמת תאבות העזים. בצד משום רבי שטוף בעזים וטבוי מן העזים. שתי גזוס אור מרבב משום רבי חייא, עגלות תחתיהם ביניהם צבעי משות רבי. אומר רבי, בין עגלה לעגלה כמלוא אורך עגלה. כמה אורך עגלה? 500. למה לי בארבעה וחוקס אגי? כפלו לי קרבו קרשים. אומר רבי, צידי עגלה כמו לרוחב עגלה. כמה רוחב עגלה? שתי עמות אומרת. למה לי? ואמתו פלגס אגיה? כפלו לי קרבו קרשים. אלא זה קיים לו דרך פשוט רבים 16 אמה, ענן וגמרין עליהם במשכן, במשכן 15 אבי. אמתי יותר אהב עוד אבי קוי בן לוי, זה שמשטר פקרו של אבי נקי פה. קוי עד הבור ויעשה לה שנבוין עשרה ורוג בן ארבעה, נתן ימנותן הגבן חייב, וכל ביקן פטור. למה לא במסטר קוי עד הבור ועשה לה? בשביל הבור ועשה לה. מסייע לרבי אוכל, רבי אוכל. בור וקוי עד תק, מצטרפים לעשרה. תן ימי אוכל, בור בשביל רבים. עמוקה עשרה וחבה ארבעה, אין נמלין ממנה בשבת, אלא אם כן עשו לה מפיצות גבוהה עשרה צמחים. אם שותים ממנה בשבת, אלא אם כן נכניס לראשו ורובו. ובור וכולי אתה מצטרפים לעשרה. בור מיני רב מורדכי מרוב, עמוד ברשות הרבים. גבוה עשרה ורחבה ארבעה. וזרק ונק על רבב מהו. מאמרינן, הרי עקירה בישר, הרי הנחה בישר. אבל גיל מקימן ממקום פטור. כעס ילה, לא. אמר להם, מסליסני. אז השאלה לרב יוסף, אמר להם, מסליסני. אז השאלה לבאי, אמר להם, מסליסני. אמרו, כול חברו כדה, דרי תחתית. אמר להם, ועד לא תסברו, אז מה, אני נותר מי המנותין הגרות חייו. אמר להם, מסליסן, maybe במחר. So, מחר נמי, יש לו מדליה פורטה. Yes, but in Tlemush, no, or in the Rangi Bacharitza. Amr Maisha, boy, Rabbi Yochanan, Koto, Rishit Rabin. Gubula Asara, Inura Chava, Ba'al, Vukat, Lekarmet, Ba'asa, Olu, Rishit Rabin, Vizar, Ben Agar, Gav, Ma'am. Mi Amina, Kimi, De Inura Chava, Ba'am, Akam, Turum, היהודי, אומרת, אם אני אעשה עוד רשות היחיד, כמה דמה לדמי? אמרו לו, כך וכונה, לאחר הוא עושה מחיצה לעצמו לפרושיקן, עיר מלאנו, אמר פי הברשי, אמר רב, וכן אמר ביוקן, אמר ביוקן, אמר ביוקן, אמר ביוקן, קוטו בשרבים, גבוה עזרה, ואין הולך על עזרה, ומוקף הקרמה. And then he comes along, ועשה רשות היחיד, אז זורק ונח אגביו חייד, לאחרים עושה מחיצה לעצמו לפרושיקן.